If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hey everybody, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
I'm Allison.
And this is the podcast where we ruin a horror movie.
So if you were looking for something else, stick around and enjoy this.
This is a podcast that gives worms to ex-girlfriends. As always, thank you for joining us. I'm Hallie, again, if this is your first time listening. And I love horror movies, and all I want to do is explain them to someone, and that someone
is
a very special Allison.
I'm Allison, and I hate horror movies, but I'm also desperate to know what happens in all of them. So thank God I have Hallie to be my way more interesting Wikipedia.
So, you know, get cozy, wrap yourself in a cocoon of blankets and or like an actual cocoon, like if there's a giant spider in your house, you know, have them wrap you up real tight.
Well, not spiders. So I guess it would be cocoons are for insects that metamorphosize.
Oh, right. Like a silkworm?
Like a caterpillar to a butterfly or I guess a moth.
Right.
If you have moths, I guess you could cocoon yourself.
Ask one of the many moths in your home, the giant human-sized moths in your home, to please wrap you up tight and get
first
cozy.
To clean up after themselves, and then to wrap you in a nice cocoon and settle in for this week's movie, which is...
The Wicker Man. Now, we had, you know, sort of a back and forth, whether we would do the original 1973 Wicker Man.
Yes.
Or do the iconic 2006 version starring Nicolas Cage.
Yes. And you started watching the Nick Cage remake.
Because one of my fondest memories is seeing it in theaters with my friend Megan and one other person, I can't recall, I think Will. And we died laughing. We fell out the entire time. Other people were shushing us because we were laughing so hard. Because it's a fun watch.
Yeah.
And so I treasure that memory. So I thought, oh, how fun it would be to give Allison that experience. The problem was when I started to watch, I was like, oh, actually, this remake is not good.
Yes.
And the thing that makes it fun and watchable is Nick Cage's acting, which I cannot replicate in my explanation.
Nobody can. It's unique in its uniqueness. It's the only, no one can be Nick Cage except for Nick Cage.
And Nick Cage famously gave an interview about The Wicker Man where he essentially said, I knew it wasn't going to be good, but sometimes you just have to let a movie be what it is. And I think that is, I have to let that movie be untranscribable and give you the actual original Wicker Man, which I love. It's less than 90 minutes long, which is what most horror movies should be, in my opinion. We do not need a 2.5-hour horror movie.
All movies should be 90 minutes.
I don't want to say, but there was a certain recent superhero movie which was around about 2.5 hours long.
Too long. It's an hour too long.
An hour too long.
Hour too
long. Most movies should be 90 minutes. And this is...
You can quote both of us on that. That is a stance that we will draw that line in the sand. Movies should be 90 minutes.
So I would say, and so this is a pleasure to revisit. We're going to do... the original Wicker Man. So we have Allison always watch the trailer to not only, you know, educate her about what film we're talking about, but also give her a little bit of the tone, a little bit of the flavor, the costuming.
You want to see, like, you know, it's easier to imagine this retelling if you have, like, a little taste of what the movie is. And I'll tell you, this trailer, what a taste. I mean, just, I actually, having watched it, like, can't get a handle on the tone of the movie. Like, I can,
ooh, okay.
But I, like... It's scary, obviously, because you're like, what's... It's confusing. It's a confusing trailer. If you're trying to figure out what a movie is about and what happens, that's not something you're going to get from watching this original trailer.
Great.
And the music choices, which I don't know if they're the same, you know, sound choices that are in the movie, but the trailer music goes from scary to kind of like British hijinks. So that was hard to kind of navigate. But it looks terrifying.
It was like to take a baseline scary. Mm-hmm. And I guess, Allison, my first question is, there's two different things I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
But the first one is, how scary do you find the concept of GMOs, which of course are genetically modified organisms?
Like in food?
Yeah.
I guess like not that scary. I guess something I've accepted.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I feel, unfortunately, due to climate change, I think the days at which we could sort of not have them are over.
Yeah, I think that's something that I've unfortunately like accepted as part of life.
Yeah.
And like it's like thrilling when something is non-GMO. So like right. That's like it's so part of our world that like it's notable to note when things do not contain GMOs.
And then my other question is, how do you feel about pagan Celtic religions?
Not good. Bad.
That's two thumbs down from you on that one.
That's two thumbs down for pagan Celtic religions and me. Yeah, I mean, I think like anything where like, you know, there's a lot of like worshiping of a thing, which mm-hmm. I guess is the basis of religion, is worshiping things.
Yeah, unfortunately,
that
yeah.
is really, it, I mean, and we've talked before about religion and I don't like it, especially as a device in a horror movie because I think it's just, it's scary. It's I think yeah. blind worship is scary and leads to scary behavior and outcomes. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously, and in the, obvious, I know that that's like part of this movie because it's, mm-hmm. you know, from the trailer, you can tell a lot of mask work.
Yes.
And I don't love that. I mean, I understand that makes a good movie. As a person who is scared of things, I am scared of those. I'm scared of masks.
And then finally, would you like to guess the twist, or do you think there will be a twist in The Wicker Man?
Guess the twist.
I don't even know what this movie is about. It's almost Great. Impossible for me to guess a twist, let alone just a general plot trajectory. I don't know anything. I can't.
Great.
Which is why I'm really excited we're doing this, because it's another movie that does get referenced in pop culture.
I'm very excited for you to experience this. I really enjoyed it. I had seen it before, but I absolutely loved it in my revisiting. And I'm going to say this now because somebody, one of our listeners, Hightower_RC on Twitter, thank you so much for sending us this note. And they ask, can we have a new rule that when Hallie asks Allison what she would do, the very first answer can't be, I would just take myself out. And I think that maybe, perhaps yes. this episode, you would be inclined to say that at a certain point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. And okay. Are you okay with that rule? Is that we are taking, I will just walk out a window off the table.
Yes.
In
I think that in order for there to be real, meaningful dialogue about actions, we need to take me killing myself immediately off the table.
Right. Thank
because
you.
Because that and is I almost always that. My answer, and it is my instinct.
Right, exactly. And you know, you can't fight City Hall. In no. this case, City Hall being your immediate instinct. But, you know, at least for the, you know, like the near future going forward, we'll try yeah. to have that be maybe the second option.
Yes. Yes. And we will talk about what I would do, knowing that what I would really do is probably just kill myself.
Right. Yes. Exactly. This will be the underscore. Like, we know what you'd really
right.
do.
Right. It's like, yeah. You know you're going to. But, like, what if you couldn't do that? What would you do? So that's exactly. kind of moving into that segment. That's how we're all going to be thinking.
And I just wanted to say, we're going to talk at the end sort of the differences between the original Wicker Man and the Nick Cage remake.
Great.
It was very funny because Allison asked me, so this movie's about bees, right? And I said, well, I guess technically this movie is about apples. So let us begin.
I feel lost.
Our apple-y journey through the Wicker Man. So the movie starts with my favorite thing of all time, which is written text on the screen.
We know that's your favorite, and because it's very scary.
Yes. Ahem. It starts with, the producer would like to thank Lord Summerisle and the people of his island off the west coast of Scotland for this privileged insight into their religious practices and for their generous cooperation in the making of this film.
Wait. Is this based on real stuff?
I mean...
Or is that kind of a fake... Like,
yes, I think it's supposed to be like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like based on a real story.
Okay.
But it is, in fact, not based on a real story.
Well, I believe that the story is not, but like is the group of people that we're following based on real people and practices?
In a sense, and we'll get to that, where yes, like for example, the Wicker Man is a real thing from pagan religions. We'll get into that. So yes, in a sense... These things may or may not have happened at some point in time. This actual island and these actual people do not exist.
Okay,
it's sort of a...
That's helpful.
Yeah. If yes, then... If it's a yes-anding of different pagan traditions.
Sure.
So we open on a biplane heading to the tiny island of Summerisle. So it's off the coast of Scotland. And it's piloted by our protagonist, Police Sergeant Neil Howie, who everyone refers to as Howie. So I keep thinking that's his first name.
Okay.
And he is there to investigate the disappearance of a young girl named Rowan Morrison. And he received an anonymous letter, and it said, Rowan Morrison, she is a daughter of Mae Morrison. She is 12 years old. No one has seen her for a year. So this girl has been missing for a year.
Before anybody was like, we should contact someone?
Yes. And he was not, there wasn't signed. He was given no information about who to talk to. But because Sergeant Howie is like a upstanding, and as we find out, very Christian person, mm-hmm. he sets out to find this girl.
Okay.
And we'll get into it, but the first mistake right off top that he makes is you always go somewhere with another person. You do not go
no.
on a to look for a disappeared person without bringing another cop no, with you have, or somebody.
You have to bring a partner or like anyone else who can be, yes. That's just good sense. And maybe men don't know that.
Well, and he learns it pretty fast that he should have had a buddy or, and yeah. this is the era before cell phones, but you know, have a cell phone, have somebody you could reach out to be like, mm-hmm. I think something has gone mm-hmm. wrong on yes. this tiny island. So he arrives and there's a group of men on the dock, including the harbor master, and they say, oh, you can't land here. This is private property. And he said, I can land here. I am a police officer and I'm looking for a disappeared child. So let me on. So they could have begrudgingly let him come onto the dock. And he shows them the photo that was mailed to him with this letter. Okay. And they're like, we don't recognize this girl. We don't know who this is. I've never seen her. And he said, okay, do you know Mae Morrison? Because it says that's her mother. They go, oh, Mae Morrison. Yeah, we know her. She runs like the post office / candy shop. So yeah, but that's not her daughter.
If more post offices in America sold candy, I would not hate them so much.
Yeah, they say she has like, oh, she runs a post office. And then you go there and it's like, this is just a candy shop that also your mail can be sent out here from.
Okay. Sure.
But they tell him that photo is not Mae Morrison's daughter. So we don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
And there immediately he sets off through this like bucolic, beautiful, you know, like what you imagine for a Scottish village, like cobblestones and like quaint little every business has like a little sign that's like hand painted with like he, for example, he goes to an inn, it's called the Green Man Inn. And okay. it's adorable. However, cute. Unfortunately, as he walks by, everyone goes to their window and stares at him.
No, thank you. I don't
Everyone's
like that.
Looking at him. And there's a song that plays throughout that is sort of like this, like, oh, like the beautiful fields of Scotland. And the refrain that is played over and over again is, I'm not gonna try to sing it, but the lines are corn rigs and barley rigs, and corn rigs are bonny. I'll not forget that happy night among the rigs with Annie. They play okay. this song, I'm going to say 12 times, or at least that line over and over again.
Ugh, I don't like, is that in the trailer?
I think so. Yeah.
That might be like where I was like, wait, what's the tone of the, is it kind of a, like,
yeah, they do. In this movie, there are a lot of moments where it's, it feels like moments that would have been played very traditionally spooky are accompanied by this kind of like lighthearted, like almost yes. celebratory music,
yes.
which is fun.
Very scary.
So he goes to Mae Morris's post office and she's like, oh, I don't have a daughter named Rowan. Here's my daughter, Myrtle. Myrtle's significantly younger. So Mae's supposed to be like 12 or 13. Myrtle's 9. You know, and they're like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have another daughter. Mm-hmm. And she gets called to the shop. And while she's gone, Howie asks Myrtle, her actual daughter, she says, did you have a sister? Do you know who Rowan is? And she says, I know who Rowan is. Rowan's a hare. She lives in the fields. And he's like, all right, well, that's not helping
that's
me.
That's not any. Helpful. A hare? Like H-A-R-E?
Yes, like a rabbit.
Okay. I'm imagining like just like a long hair, which as a lady with long hair, I'm constantly finding kind of alone throughout my apartment. So
I mean, I refer to you as a hair.
I'm
for
a hair.
Sure.
I'm a hair.
So he's like, okay, great. Well, that's not of any help to me. Thanks so much, guys. It's late enough in the day. It took him so long to get there. He goes and he gets a room with the Green Man Inn, which is also the town bar.
Okay.
As soon as he walks in, everyone's like drunk and singing and carrying on. As soon as he walks in, everyone goes dead quiet and just watches him go up to the landlord, whose name is McGregor, and says, could I get dinner in a room? Everybody's staring at him.
Okay.
And McGregor says, of course, my daughter will show you to your room. And we turn, and it's his daughter's name is Willow, and she's the most beautiful woman in the world.
Great.
Like, a woman that if you saw her, you'd be like, okay, but how are you here? Like, right. You're a movie star.
Right.
And everyone starts singing, and by everyone, I mean like these filthy old men in the bar, start singing a bawdy song called The Landlord's Daughter.
Ugh.
And it's about how, like, the landlord's daughter makes your manhood stand at attention and just all this filth. Like, oh, the best part of the landlord's daughter is between her right toe and her left toe. I'd be like, I will burn this into the ground if that was me.
Get out of there.
I'd be like, hey, Dad, I'm moving away and I'm never calling
her
again. Sorry,
all your gross patrons and friends keep singing about wanting to fuck me, so I'm going to leave.
And unlike in reality, Willow is like laughing along and like loves it and is like kind of
very
grinding.
Very pre-Me Too. Yeah. It's like you just had to swallow and accept those things.
And there's this big, tall, sort of burly guy who we later find out is named Oak. And they're kind of like gently grinding at each other. And like, and Howie, because he's a very prim and proper police officer. And as, again, as we established, very Christian, he is disgusted.
Of course.
He's like, oh my God, these drunks. And like, they're all like writhing on each other. And so Willow gets some dinner and he notices that Summer Isle is known in Scotland for their produce. That's like sort of their thing. Everything he is served is from a can. And he's like, well, that's kind of odd. Like these right. beans are so old, they're like turquoise. And Willow says to him, basically all of their produce gets shipped. So they don't eat their own produce.
They don't consume their, okay, that's all. Got it.
Yeah. And he asks her like, oh, could I have one of your famed Summer Isle apples? And she says, we don't have any. He goes, no apples? In the most shocked way you possibly can be about having no apples.
Right.
So he finishes up and it's evening. So he goes out to take a walk and he walks outside, Allison. And what does he see on the lawn directly in front of the inn, do you think?
A rabbit?
Just a bunch of couples fucking.
Oh.
Just people. It's the middle of the night.
People are
just
close. Rabbits
fuck. Oh, yeah. You were right there. That's true. Yeah. Rabbits have
rabbits
sex,
have
ergo.
Sex, and therefore, you would see many nude adults fornicating. Are they nude? I imagine they're all naked.
Some of them are nude. I mean, they're mostly clothed, but then like a woman's top will be out off or like the guy's pants will be down. So they're not totally nude. But then he also notices in the churchyard, which there's a cemetery, there are people watering the graves because there's a tree growing on every grave.
Okay.
And there is at one point a totally nude woman weeping and holding onto a gravestone.
Oh, nothing to worry about.
So
like nude mourning is definitely the most jarring.
Nude middle of the night mourning while you're sitting
at
your bare ass on like another grave, essentially.
Ugh.
So as you can imagine, Howie, and I don't know if Howie's supposed to be Catholic. I'm going to say he's Catholic because he's either Catholic or Episcopalian. But, you know, some uptight, buttoned up religion. He's disgusted and he runs back and he's like, I got to go to sleep. I got to get out of here. And he's laying in bed, and we sort of see flashbacks of him in church and, mm-hmm. and how he sort of dedicated his life to being a religious person. In the room next to him, separated only by this wall, a totally nude Willow sort of like tries to seduce him through the wall. So she also sings sort of like a, oh, come and give me a howdy-do type of like... That's literally one of the lines. Come and say, how do you do? Like, she's dancing nude. She's, like, running her hands over these pagan statues. And he's in his bed, like, sweating, trying to resist the temptation.
So he can, like, feel, like, he can hear her.
Yes.
And, like, feel her, like, trying to lure him.
Yes. And I think we're just established that he is someone who is, like, so upright and so like he cannot be seduced, and she's like this like wild, natural, seductive beauty that he has to like hold himself against, and he succeeds. He doesn't go over there.
But
she wakes up in the morning and she goes, why didn't you come to my room? I was calling for you. And it's like, that's, I didn't realize that I thought like the more that she was singing in like a metaphorical way, and it's like, oh no, she was literally calling for him.
Come fuck me,
I'm next door. Which I thought was fun. And he says, well, I just couldn't. I'm very flattered. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate the offer, but I am very religious and I don't believe in sex before marriage and I'm engaged. So we established that he is a virgin.
Okay.
And this guy's 35, 40 if he's a day. Like he's not like a, you know, young man.
Right, he's like a 21-year-old where you're like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, no, this guy is like, but he's sweating bullets trying not to run over there because he's never had sex
and
before.
And he doesn't even know what he's missing.
Exactly. And he, well, unfortunately, he may never know, seeing as how things go for him. I know.
Oh, no.
And Willow tells him, you know, you probably should wrap up your investigation before tomorrow, because tomorrow is May Day, which is like our big pagan yearly, like, spring festival. Mm-hmm. and it's not really for outsiders, but everyone is sort of like treating his investigation like he's being ridiculous. And so far, he doesn't know if this girl exists. He doesn't know what happened to her. So he sets off across the island. And this is the point in the movie where I realized this is technically a musical. Okay. So she's already sung a song, and then he walks past. They're setting up for the May Day the next day. Mm-hmm. And they're setting up a maypole. And there's all these little, they're all like the boys of the village are tied to the maypole. And there's a man singing. And the song is like, you know, on the bed there was a girl, on the girl there was a man, in the man there was a seed. From the seed grew a boy. From the boy grew a man. From the man grew a grave. And from the grave grew a tree. And I think that's just setting us up for like, this is a natural religion. Yes. Where this is all about like the returning to the earth. Yes. and returning
and growth
again.
And being one with nature, I could sense as part of it.
And so Howie goes over to the schoolyard, the one room schoolhouse to be like, do you have records about this girl? Like, do you know anything about her? And all the girls are inside learning about May Day. And they learn that the teacher says, now, what does the maypole represent? And the girls say, phallic symbol.
Because you can be quite sure that I shall report this to the proper authorities. Everywhere I go on this island, it seems to me I find degeneracy. And there is brawling in bars. There is indecency in public places. And there is corruption of the young. And now I see it all stems from here. It stems from the filth taught here in this very schoolroom.
It's like they're being taught, you know, taught a pagan religion the way that we would have been taught. Like, being Catholic, I would be taught in Sunday school about Catholicism. Mm-hmm. They're being taught about their religion.
Right.
Which is all about fertility.
A lot of sex.
Exactly.
Good for them.
I know. I'm like, things could be worse. Yeah. You know. And they are worse because he goes and he demands like a record of the school. And there's one empty desk. And the teacher said, no, Rowan doesn't exist. And all the girls lie and say, oh, we don't know anything about Rowan. But then when he sees the school ledger, she is there. And he hauls the teacher outside. Okay. He's like, I'm going to report you to the authorities for debauchery and obscenity. And worst of all, lying to me. And you know,
he's freaking
out.
Any of those crimes?
Well, exactly. I know. I'm like, I don't think it's a crime to teach kids about phallic symbols. I get it. If your teacher let us know.
I don't even know if it's a crime to lie to a police officer.
That's a good question. I don't know that. I guess in my mind, but like.
It is to lie like during a trial under oath, but I don't think like lying to a cop is a crime.
I hope I never find this out.
I don't want to know firsthand.
And he calls the teacher outside. She said, oh, you misunderstood. You asked if Rowan existed, and she doesn't exist anymore because she's dead. See, that was a miscommunication.
Oh, yes. Clearly, everybody makes that mistake in those kinds of questioning and discussions.
And she doesn't say that we're dead. She said, oh, you asked if she existed, and she doesn't exist anymore. And so Howie said, so she's dead. And she just says, oh, no, we don't use those words. We just say she returned to the earth. And he's like, shut up. Like, I'm mad. Just use the words we all agree on. You know, just tell me where she is. And he's also disgusted they're not Christian, like, full out. Like, you know, there could be a lot of different religions he's grossed out by. Right. This happens to be a pagan one.
Yeah. But this one's got to be, because it just seems, it's the polar opposite of, like, a rigorous Christianity. It's, like, free about, like, sex, like, open about death and not scared of it. Like,
exactly. It's everything that Christianity isn't.
This is the opposite of, like, Catholicism and Christianity.
Yeah. But he's enraged. Like, these kids will never know about Christ. And she's like, well, we have our own religion here on the island. And he says, is Rowan's, you know, it's like, is her physical body buried in the churchyard? And the teacher goes, well, in a manner of speaking, he's like, no, I mean, literally.
Yeah. Nope.
Which I think is fun.
The manner of speaking I'm using is reality and literalism. So, is she like?
And the teacher says, well, the building connected to where Rowan is buried is no longer used for Christian worship, so it's debatable if it's still a churchyard. He's like, I am going to slap everyone in this town if I have to fucking deal with this whole movie.
This is a nightmare. Like, people who are evasive and like, but like in a kind of like whimsical way.
Like, oh, I'm sorry, you misunderstood. Our understanding of reality. It's like, oh, but tell me where this girl is.
Snap out of it. I just want questions answered.
So he goes to the churchyard and there's all these incredibly old pagan gravestones. So I guess there was a Christian church, but it's not used for Christian worship. It's used for their, you know, natural religion. And one of the gravestones says, here lieth Beach Buchanan, protected by the ejaculation of serpents.
Excuse me?
That's it. We don't know anything else.
Somebody just comes snakes?
Or the snakes came protecting this person.
Oh, okay. Protected.
You're right.
Okay.
Is the ejaculation serpents, or are serpents ejaculating?
Right, right. I guess, yeah, it's hard to kind of diagram that grave sentence, but all right. Either one.
It could be either. It could be either. So Howie finds the groundskeeper, the original groundskeeper, Willie, and says, what's this newish grave? And he goes, what's the tree planted on here? Because every grave has a tree. He goes, aye, that's a Rowan tree. And Howie says, whose grave is it? He goes, it's Rowan Morris's grave. It's like, bitch, then why did no one just say that to me?
Where's this guy been the whole time?
And tied to the tree, which is like a little twiggy, you know, new tree, is her umbilical cord. So it's like a dried out, preserved umbilical cord, which I guess they also do.
Okay. I was really on board with this religion until now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, great, because there's a lot of other bad stuff they're about to do.
Okay, I figured it's not just like a beautiful, peaceful group, but there's other things afoot, but...
So he goes to Mae Morrison again and says, essentially, you know, what happened with your daughter? Like, you said you didn't have a daughter. She's like, yes, I don't have a daughter. Technically, now I have this one. It's like the same thing where it's like their understanding of reality is so different that they can't even answer his questions. So then he's like, I'm going to the registrar's office, which they still have, to get a to read her death certificate. Like, they have to have some sort of documentation or else what are we doing here?
Right.
So he goes over and there is no death certificate, but the registrar herself confirms Rowan is dead, but she doesn't know anything about her death. So now Howie's like, oh, is she fucking murdered? And that's why no one's telling me anything, is they all know that she's killed. And that's why they're trying to cover this up in some way. So he figures out that in the Green Man Inn, there's like every year they have a picture of the May Queen, who's like a 12, 13-year-old girl. And she is posed in front of like all of the produce of the island. So it's like this big bountiful, like a tiered thing of produce with a girl in front who is elected the May Day Queen. The picture from last year is missing. And he asks McGregor, the landlord, like, okay, so why is this picture? He's like, oh, someone must have knocked it down. It's being repaired. He assumes there must be a picture of Rowan. She must have been May Day Queen last year. And they're trying to hide the fact that there's, I've only have this one photo and I have not seen any other photo of hers.
Right.
So he goes to the town chemist, who's also the photographer. And of course,
why would he be two different people?
His name is Mr. Lennox, and he only has old-timey medicines. So the first thing you see when you go into chemist, what like every chemist has a big old glass cookie jar of foreskins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Nothing to and be then concerned it's also about. Like,
it's like a big tank of fetal pigs, a big gallon of snake oil.
Great.
So they're using this old-timey medicine that doesn't work.
Yeah,
and and, you know, for example, Mae Morrison, you see her put a frog into her daughter Myrtle's
throat. Yes, that is in the trailer. And it was upsetting to see.
And then pulling it back out with the idea that when you draw it back out, you're going to be drawing the sore throat out of her throat, which, again, is not real.
Is that based in, like, is that where, like, frog in your throat is? Is that something? Or are we just, is that just coincidentally a thing we say in a scene in a movie?
I'm going to say that you're 100% right, because I don't know.
Okay, great. That's how we should approach questions moving forward.
Exactly. And so everyone he talks to is like, I don't know, you're going to have to ask Lord Summerisle. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Just go ask Lord Summerisle. And he's like, who is this motherfucker? And so he commandeers essentially a horse-drawn carriage. And,
of course.
And travel across a beautiful landscape. To me, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they play that song again. It was like, corn rigs and barley rigs and corn rigs are body. And it's like, okay, we get it. And as he's driving up to Lord Summerisle's castle, he sees a bunch of teenage girls nude. They're not really nude. They're wearing like body stockings.
Right.
But in the world of the movie, nude.
Nude, yeah.
Dancing around a fire, singing another song. This is the third song, I believe, or fourth song after the landlord's daughter. So they are performing, singing a song that's about how they want to become pregnant and keep the pregnancy. So sort of like, you know, let the fire within me grow, make the seed grow in my body, which again, he finds very pagan and disgusting.
Yeah. Which he shouldn't though, because that's like the basis of Christian sex is that it's like for reproduction.
I know. I was like, aren't there like a lot of crossovers? Like, we also see a bunch of pregnant ladies. I'm like, isn't that kind of what you guys want too?
Yeah, like, they're just like, if you're going to have sex, you better make a baby. Like, all right.
Yeah, the Venn diagram, there's a lot of overlap.
You know, more than he probably wants to admit.
So he shows up and Lord Summerisle greets him. And Lord Summerisle, I believe, is played by Christopher Lee. Okay. So Christopher Lee plays Lord Summerisle and he's immediately like, oh, I don't know. What is death? Who can tell me what is being alive? And obviously, Howie has no time for that.
Right. He's like, just answer the question, asshole.
And so Howie tells him, I want to exhume Rowan's body. You know, because he's like, I believe Rowan was murdered. Right. I think that's why everyone's acting all sketchy.
Right. So clearly her body is somewhere. Let me see it.
Exactly. And it's like, I'm not going to let you do it. And Lord Summerisle says, yeah, go ahead. Knock yourself out. You want to exhume her?
It's like, that's... Right. Yeah. Maybe we should have started with that question, though. Maybe more.
Yeah, and
people.
Howie's like, oh, all right, I will do it. And he's
now
kind of deflated
to dig up a
by
body,
like...
So that's fun.
But then now he's also like going wide with it, where he's like, and while I'm here, you have no Jesus, no right. priests, right. no Christianities, which is like, okay, that's another issue altogether. Right. And Summerisle says, and he's like, and these girls are dancing naked and jumping over the fire. You know, he's like, oh, those girls are praying to the god of fire and asking him to impregnate them in an act of parthenogenesis, which is what sharks and other animals sometimes do, where they impregnate themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're like, who could blame them? Who wouldn't want to have a god's baby rather than that of some acne-scarred artisan?
Okay, well, that's rude.
I know. It's like, girl.
It's like an artisan. He has a job. Like, you should be so lucky.
He has a job. He can afford to go to a dermatologist.
Right.
And so he also points out, you know, technically Jesus was the virgin birth. So, like, this might seem weird to you, but, like, this is also in your religion. A bunch of, like, Mary was essentially impregnated by a ghost.
Right.
Which Howie does not want to hear.
No,
Howie's
of course
like,
not.
No, they're very different, in fact. And so we find out that the sort of backstory of Summerisle is Lord Summerisle's great-grandfather moved to the island in 1968, and he was like a botanist, and nothing can grow on the island. The people who lived there were like destitute, barren, volcanic soil.
So it seemed to him was to rouse the people from their apathy by giving them back their joyous old gods. And that as a result of this worship, the barren island would burgeon and bring forth fruit in great abundance. What he did, of course, was to develop new cultivars of hardy fruit suited to local conditions.
He engineered fruit and vegetables that could grow on that island.
Okay.
And we do see shots of palm trees. Like, they are growing a bunch of stuff that is not supposed to grow there.
Okay.
And he essentially, while he's doing this, the residents of the island sort of started to worship nature. Once these plants started to grow, it was seen as so miraculous that they started to worship nature. And the original Lord Summerisle sort of started to buy into it.
Okay.
And was sort of like encouraging it. So like they saw him as like this incredible figure that came in and gave
God-like.
Them this.
I mean.
Yeah, exactly. But since then, the implication is that now this current Lord Summerisle believes that. Like, he believes in a way that the original people, maybe they, you know, it's like you believe in it in a superstitious way, but now people legitimately
actually
believe this is true.
That this is real.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, again, Howie finds so disgusting. He's like, you're heathens. This is blasphemous.
That's false idolatry.
Yeah, and he's like, well, I don't know how it's not any less believable than what you believe in.
A valid point.
And Summerisle was basically like, well, I already told you you could exhume her body, so what else are we still talking
about? Yeah, I got stuff to do, man. Let's keep it moving.
And so Howie goes that night to the groundskeeper, and they dig up Rowan's grave.
Okay.
To be like, I'm going to examine this body and see if she is damaged.
Okay.
And or has been murdered and whatever. Yeah. And inside, they find, not Rowan's body, the corpse of a hare.
Right. Okay.
And so he storms back to Summerisle's castle and he throws the hare. Lord Summerisle is carrying on drinking with the teacher we saw earlier.
Great.
And he throws the hare's dead body on the middle of their blanket where they're having an indoor picnic.
Nothing is going to ruin a picnic like a dead rabbit.
And he's like, I found this in Rowan's grave. And the teacher said, that's so nice. She became a hare in death.
This teacher.
She transmogrified.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they're definitely like, she's not having to get a license. Like, there's no process by which she is, like,
she didn't
getting
get a master's in education. She doesn't have a specialty. She's just like, I'm a lady, and now I'm in charge.
Yeah. And so he's screaming at them, and he says to Summerisle, like, how do you explain this? And Summerisle says, I think you're supposed to be the detective here. And so my question to you, Allison, at this point, if you were Howie, Sergeant Neil Howie, what do you do?
What would you do?
I mean, I get in my plane and I go back home and I forget that these people exist. But if I'm really trying to solve this murder, I definitely also like call in other people. Like,
yes. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, doing this alone, like, especially like these people feel very wily. And so, like, I'm sure while you're talking to one person, like, someone could be, like, messing with the thing you're going to look at next. Like, there's just, like, you need a second set of eyes on all of this. and perhaps somebody who isn't so ingratiated into the Christian church, somebody who's a little removed from religion who can come in and start to kind of assess.
Yeah. And I also feel like there's just no, if this entire town isn't on this, you right. cannot get ahead of them.
No, this is, yeah, they've won already.
Yeah. Well, so Howie says, like you've pointed out, he says, fuck you, I'm going back to Christian Scotland, and I'm going to bring holy hell down on this island, and you guys are going to regret it. And they're like, okay, bye, bitch. Like, we didn't want you here for May Day tomorrow anyways.
Right.
Like,
yeah, we're trying to do our own thing. Get out of here.
Yeah, we're all going to fuck tomorrow. Like, you're going to be weird about it. So on his way home, it's like, again, the middle of the night, he breaks into the chemist shop, and he's going through all the negatives to find the photo from last year. Mm-hmm. And he finds it. It is a picture of Rowan.
Okay.
But more importantly, there is like virtually no produce around her. And so Howie thinks, wait
and
a minute.
All the other ones are in front of like a big giant produce display.
So if she was the May Queen, May Day Queen, and then there was a bad harvest, or they're blaming her for the harvest, mm-hmm. they might have sacrificed her.
Yes, absolutely. That's a real
And so the next morning, which I just think the timeline of this is very funny. It's like, you already think that this girl has been murdered. You've already declared you're going to leave. You told everybody, you know, you stayed at the end. You're like, I hate all you people. I'm leaving.
Right.
You then go to the library and do a bunch of investigating.
I can't believe they have a library.
And well, luckily, the library is full of information about pagan cults because that's all they care about.
Right. Yeah. That's all you have around.
So I guess it's like, this is the best library to do this research. Like, mm-hmm. no other library is going to have this kind of research. And so he reads about May Day. And in short, May Day is sort of like this harvest festival. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of a May Queen is very typical. And he reads about these sort of like the highlights of what normally happens is like somebody dresses up as Punch the Fool. And some the priest or like the head of the town dresses up as the goddess of fertility. So he dons this goddess's outfit and he has like right. a sickle and a plant in his hand and they lead a procession through town and then depending on which pagan religion you are a part of, either it's symbolic or you actually literal. Murder the May Queen. Okay. You flay her skin off and then the head of the town or the priest wears her skin and then they all dance through town.
Oh.
So, how
I was about to say, this sounds fun and now I would like to retract all of those thoughts and any statements.
And yeah, I think that that's valid. And I was doing a little research and basically a lot of like, which is, I mean, this all goes back to like issues we still have today where it's mm-hmm. like a lot of reports about like what paganism, quote unquote, yeah. pagan religion is like filtered through like so many different like views of like, like basically it's like taking, it'd be like if you were to see Catholicism and be like, oh my God, they drink blood and they eat the body.
Right. Yeah. It's from the perspective of people who don't understand the symbolism and aren't part of it.
Right.
And so therefore it seems horrific.
And so like, not that human sacrifice hasn't ever happened. It obviously has. It's just that like most religions, when they're being viewed by like typically the conquering religion, like mm-hmm, religion mm-hmm. or culture.
Whatever white religion is coming in.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like Rome, you know, like they yeah. come in and see them as this barbarous religion and they take like, oh my God, they wear the goddess's skin when it's like, well, it might just be a costume, but right. you already find these people so barbaric and
that
vile.
You're assuming that's like actual awful violence and that they're terrible when it's not just like your
exactly.
own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in this case, he is right. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, so he does his research at the library. Again, love it. There's like an old lady like in the library staring at him doing his research.
Great.
But he's like, okay, so I got to get out of here and I got to get the troops from Scotland and fly back in. He has the harbor master take him to his biplane. And unfortunately, somebody has fucked with his plane. He cannot leave.
Of course.
And while he's doing this, it's the morning of May Day. And so we start to see all of these townspeople with different animal masks still watching him, but with these eyeless animal masks.
The masks. They are troubling.
And so he decides, okay, like, fuck it. If I can't leave, take me back to the island, I will find Rowan myself. Because now he's thinking, oh, they haven't sacrificed her yet. They're going to do it today.
Yeah.
And if I could find her, potentially I could stop this from happening. Again,
but it's like, doesn't she already have a grave? Like,
but the grave had a rabbit in it, remember?
Right, but like, they already made the grave. Oh, I guess they know they're going to kill her, so.
Well, to be fair, I think that's what we're supposed to think is like their idea of death and like burial. Like for them, it's like, oh, we buried a rabbit or a hare, and that's right. what death is or whatever. Right. Like we're supposed to think they're so wackety dackety. Like he can't use any information he has to be like, oh, she's okay or not.
Right. Yes.
He has to assume these people are monsters and are trying to do something terrible, which in his defense, it turns out he is correct. So he starts running around the town. You know, he goes, he runs back to the Green Man Inn. He's literally barging into people's apartments and like pulling people out, like going through their wardrobes while everyone else is busy getting ready for the festival. So if this is, he's kind of allowed to do this because everyone's in the courtyard. Everyone's like drinking.
Everyone's
busy. Everyone's busy. Everyone has a different costume, mm-hmm. like a different animal head, you know. Ugh. And we see he sort of spies on their festivities. Mm-hmm. And Lord Samael says, which I appreciate a human sacrifice that has a real strict start time. Lord Samael says, we meet at 3 p.m. We parade through the town. We go down to the beach. And then, of course, we make our holy sacrifice to Nuada, our most sacred god of the sun. And Evelenau? The beloved goddess of our orchards to quicken the growth of our crops. So, how we saw it,
so it's
the
a
crops have failed. Exactly. So Howie runs back to Mae Morrison's shop. He's like, bitch, help me find your daughter. Like, what kind of mother are you? Which is also the trailer. Like, what are you doing? Right. Like, help me. And Mae says, you should go back to the mainland. You should keep out of things that are no concern to you.
Right.
And she tells him, you don't know anything of sacrifice. You don't know what true sacrifice is. So which he takes
from
that is...
He's like, I'm a 35-year-old virgin. I absolutely understand
You think
sacrifice.
I don't know? He probably doesn't even masturbate if he's Catholic.
Yeah.
So, but I guess he takes from that is like, oh, no, I know my daughter's going to be sacrificed. That is my sacrifice. Like, she has to be sacrificed for the benefit of the...
Right. The whole island.
Which Howie does not take... He is not taking that kindly.
No, that's not a good answer.
So he's running through the town. He's literally like, oh, he rips open like bathroom's door. There's like a beautiful nude woman bathing in like a bucket. He's like, oh, sorry. He closes it. Like he's running around. He goes to the bakery. They're making like a big human shaped like piece of bread.
Great.
Like he runs into like the fishmonger and he has a fish outfit. He goes, what's that? He goes, oh, it's my costume. I'm the salmon of wisdom. Like it's like all these like quick cut, like different crazy weird like costumes and masks
activities.
And symbols.
Also like, if these people weren't making human sacrifices, I do like their vibe.
Oh, they're having a time of their lives.
They're having fun.
Yeah.
And that's nice.
And in the trailer, you see he opens a wardrobe and a little girl's body falls out. And so he's like, ah! And then he looks and she's just playing a joke on him.
Yes.
So even the kids are laughing at him, which just makes him more and more angry.
Of course.
And every house is full of like weird clowns and like all this awful stuff. And so finally, he makes his way to the mortuary where they have actual coffins, and he rips open a coffin and he finds a dead woman, an elderly dead woman, but no Rowan.
Okay.
And so finally, he makes his way back to the Green Man Inn, and he makes the funniest decision. I love this movie. The funniest decision of any horror movie I've ever seen. He sees McGregor, the landlord, and his daughter Willow, who he knows are in on it, like everyone that in the island is. He says, I'm going to take a nap for a half an hour. So you leave me alone. He goes, he takes a nap in the middle of this.
It's like your aunt, you're trying to stop an entire island from murdering a young girl.
And you know it's going to happen.
You know it's coming.
Or it starts to happen at 3 p.m. And you say, I have to go lie down.
Yeah. What? Also, how could you possibly take a nap in that environment? Like to me, like napping is like something that happens to me where I physically can no longer keep my head up and my eyes open. And I'm like, I guess I have to take a nap. Like I'm never like—
And maybe he's there. I don't know.
Things are overwhelming. I should lie down. Like that doesn't happen.
So he lies down and he hears Willow and McGregor whispering about him. And she says, I'm going to light something. It's something called the hand of God. I'm going to light it and it's going to make him sleep for days. So essentially he hears them planning to light something. And I'm thinking it's like an herb or whatever.
Yeah.
To make him, so knock him out so that he is not able to intervene in their ceremony and parade. Mm-hmm. He opens his eyes as soon as they walk out of the room. It is a human hand with like a light on each finger.
No.
Like they made a candle out of a human hand. Of course, he screams and knocks it to the ground.
Right. Yeah, that's terrifying.
And McGregor, his costume is Punch, the fool. And he knocks out, Howie knocks out McGregor, steals his costume, which fortunately has a full body costume, including a full mask.
Great.
And he's going to infiltrate the parade and try
in
to stop
this costume.
It. So my question to you is, Allison, who will survive?
Who will survive?
I'm having a hard time imagining if Rowan is even alive at this point or not. So
do you want to just take a guess?
I think they kill Rowan if she's not dead already. I think maybe Willow dies.
Okay.
In her place. Also, in addition, and then I hope that our lead, whose name I'm now forgetting, Howie, but not Howie. No, I'm going to guess that he dies.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So everyone goes down the parade. Howie sneaks into the parade in his costume. It is actually very funny because Lord Summer Isle's like yelling at him, like, "Are you drunk already? Why are you dancing? You know, like, McGregor, I'm disappointed in you." And so he's trying to like dance along to this like the bizarre parade of like pagan symbols and animals.
How could you even possibly know what to do?
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, okay." And he's dancing. And Lord Summer Isle, like we heard in the mythology, is wearing the goddess's costume, but which is very funny because it's just Christopher Lee in like a long straight wig in a purple dress over pants and a long sleeve shirt. So it's like he didn't even try to look like he's dressed like a woman or a goddess. He looks like an art teacher or like how people like a cool art chick would have dressed in like the 70s.
A dress
like,
over pants. Yeah.
Right. I was like, you really slapped this together. You did not give a fuck.
Half-assed.
So he's seeing all these different things. Like he sees them like a horse-drawn coffin, and he's like, is she in there? And then they do this ceremony where men in kilts make sort of a six-pointed star, I guess it would be, out of swords, and everyone has to stick their head in. And he sticks his head in, he's fine, he leaves, and the person behind him gets their head cut off. And he turns, and everyone's gasped. But then the person
by
is
accident?
A fake head.
Oh, okay.
No, it was part of the ceremony, but he didn't know. So then she pulls her real head out of her costume, and the head that was cut off was like
a mask.
A hat, I suppose, yeah. And everyone's like, ha-ha, we love being pagans. We love Scotland. And they're all having fun, and then they go down to the beach, and Laura Samarile hacks open these big kegs of ale, and they splash into the ocean. It's like, this is our sacrifice to the god of the ocean. Like, let him drink and be satisfied.
Naturally.
And they said, and finally, now we have to, it's now time for our most dreadful sacrifice. And they all turn, and Howie looks up, and on a cliff, we see Rowan tied up.
Okay.
So Howie blows his cover and just fucking starts running up to her, which I understand. What else was he supposed to do?
Yeah, I guess.
But like, why?
What do you do? Yeah. If you're going to do anything, you have to just kind of go. But at the same time, that's your only shot.
Everyone knows that it's you now. And so he runs up and she has a guard next to her. And he's like, oh, Howie, whatever. You know, are you enjoying our festivities? And Howie just punches him in the face and grabs Rowan. And Rowan's like, do you know what they were going to do to me? He's like, yes, I know the whole thing. I've been here for a couple days, you know. And so
does she not?
No, she's saying, like, do you know that they are going to sacrifice me? And he's like, yes, I'm caught up, you know? And so she's like, follow me. And they run into these caves while they're being pursued by the town. And there, you know, it's all this, like, a complicated cave system. And finally, they come out and they're at the top of the cliff. Oof. And they get out. And unfortunately, Lord Summer Isle and the rest of the town is already waiting up there.
Of course.
And Rowan says to her mother, who was there, did I do a good job? And they said, you did. So she runs to her mother, and we realize this is all a plot. The person they are going to sacrifice is not Rowan. It is Howie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they explained to him that it was all engineered, and it is because the crops failed.
Okay.
It's just that they needed someone like him, and that he is the perfect person to sacrifice.
A Christian?
A man who would come here of his own free will.
A man who has come here with the power of a king by representing the law.
A man who would come here as a virgin.
A man who has come here as a fool.
And they're like, if we sacrifice you, our crops will come back. And Howie's like, no, they won't.
That is not how it works.
It's not going to happen, you know? And he says, I'm a Christian. If I live again, it will be, you know, in the kingdom of God, not for your damn apples.
Right.
and Summer Isle says, well, then you must be excited because I'm giving you something that barely happens anywhere to Christians. I'm giving you a martyr's death, which means you'll go right to heaven. And there's this moment that I think is like very beautifully played where they basically, Howie says to him, like, this is not going to work. The crops are failing because they're like, these crops are not designed to grow here.
Right.
Like, this is something that is out of our head. It is nature. And Summer Isle says, no, it will work. And Howie points in and says, if this doesn't work, I'm telling you, everyone, you have to sacrifice Lord Summer Isle. And I think the thing is, like, everyone is so suggestible that I think it's sort of like,
they're like, they might.
That might be what they have to do. But in the meantime, unfortunately, Howie has, as they say, come, it's time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Ooh.
And they take him to the top of the hill. They give him like a shroud. They wipe him off. And the Wicker Man is a gigantic structure that looks like a man, made out of like twigs and branches, and it's filled with livestock. And they throw Howie inside, and they set it alight. And everyone sings, I think it's called The Summer's Coming In, and well, and sway, and they're kind of doing a dance as a village while Howie is screaming and praying to God. And I think what we're supposed to take from this is, like, you hope for Howie's sake that heaven is real and God is listening, but it will not stop him from being murdered.
Right.
And the town thinks, genuinely thinks, if we kill this person, our crops will come back, but they're probably wrong too.
Yes.
That's all they have. So it's like both of these concepts and religions will not really offer the things that they think that they are going to get from it.
No. Is any element of Burning Man
Wicker Man. Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I don't think that there are there could be sacrifices of Burning Man, but I don't think there are. But it does feel like, or is it like pagan in nature? Like, I don't know a lot about Burning Man, but I'm seeing a lot of similar, like the costumes, the revelry,
yes,
the rebirth, the giant man.
Yeah, I have the Wikipedia article open so we can look at this. So basically, a Wicker Man, according to Wikipedia, it was a large wicker statue reportedly used by ancient druids, priests of Celtic paganism, for sacrifice by burning it in effigy. So I think what they're saying, in reality, it was just burned ceremonially.
Just sticks and shit, yeah.
But I think that they're saying, like, the Greco-Roman sources who, like, explained it were like, oh, they burn men. And it's like, well, no, it's a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they did. I don't know.
I don't know.
But yes, in modern times, the Wicker Man has been symbolically referenced as part of some neo-pagan themed ceremonies without the human sacrifice, such as Burning Man.
Okay.
So I think you're right. Burning Man is an homage.
It's a celebration in some ways. Okay. That makes sense.
So
I mean,
it doesn't make sense, but that
makes sense.
And I guess at this time, I think they would have thought, oh, like, these religions did really burn people. And I think now we're saying, well, that's what the Romans said, and a lot of the Roman stuff was about, like, aren't these people barbaric? Shouldn't we be able to conquer their lands? You're right, let's do it. So I think it's like, did they? It is possible, but more likely it was, just sort of a symbolic sacrifice to their religion. And that's it. There it ends
with him screaming as he burns to death.
Yes, yeah.
All right.
Which is a genuinely terrifying scene, because he's just screaming like, oh, God, and like praying, and you know it's not going to help him. He can't escape.
Wow.
Yeah. So tell me, Allison, can you name a fatal mistake that somebody might have made in this movie?
Fatal mistakes.
I guess going to this island at all, and then going alone, and then also
going
just
alone.
And staying.
Yes.
Like, just leave.
Well, I guess once his plane was taken out of commission, he couldn't leave.
He couldn't leave.
I think that also, do not believe in a religion just because somebody made a good plant.
Mm-hmm.
Don't then retroactively
create an entire religion
make people
around
people think, yes.
Yeah, around crops. Yeah. That's a pretty good, that's a good mistake to call out.
I had a little segment that called produce or pro don't.
Oh.
And I just want to discuss which kind of produce would you be okay being sacrificed in the Wicker Man for?
Oh, okay.
For me, I'm going to say, if we're going apple, where like this town is, I'm going to say a Macintosh apple, which is like the red and green one.
Oh, yes.
It's like a little tart. I'm saying a Macintosh apple with like a little peanut butter.
Peanut butter's part of it?
Right. Well, you know, we don't know what they could grow there, but let's say they could grow peanuts too.
Okay, so an apple, a good apple with peanut butter. All right.
Yeah. I would enter into the Wicker Man and sacrifice myself.
I would say like perfectly ripe champagne mangoes.
Ooh.
Like,
yeah.
They're just so good, and it's so hard to come by them. And so much mango that we buy is awful. Or is like doesn't really ripen, doesn't as sweet, like doesn't have, like a perfect mango I would, you could sacrifice me in the Wicker Man for that.
And the only, the differences I wanted to point out in the new Wicker Man, which is like very, very similar, like Rowan is also still called Rowan. You know, it's Sister Summer Isle. Basically, mm-hmm. in the modern remake, it is a matriarchal religion mm-hmm. where the women are in charge and it's sort of seen as a beehive. So like you said, it's about honey. Their bees have stopped producing. So they lure Nick Cage to the island to sacrifice him to get their honey back, which is why there's a iconic moment of him with a cage full of bees over his head screaming, "This won't bring back your precious honey." Other than that, it's pretty much...
All right.
There's still a Wicker Man.
All right.
It's pretty much the exact same thing.
Okay.
Viewers at home, you could watch the new one and not be scared at all.
Yeah, that seems less scary. Nick Cage makes things less scary. And in some other ways, more scary.
He's great. I would say, it's watch it with a bunch of people if, God willing, we're ever able to watch movies with multiple people ever again.
Yes, that sounds fun.
And then finally, let us go now to the spooky scale.
Yeah, let's turn to our lab where we keep it. And
yes, I pulled the shroud off of it and I dusted it off.
Yes.
And covered it, dusted the spiders off.
Mm-hmm.
And the spooky scale, of course, our listeners know, this is a scale of how spooky something is, not whether we enjoyed the movie.
It's not quality-based.
It's just spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on a scale of 1 to 10 screams, Allison, how spooky did you find The Wicker Man?
A spooky scale.
I think I want to give it a 7.
Ooh, okay.
I think, like, you know, religious stuff is always very scary. I think also, like, the concept of being the only person in a place when as an outsider and everyone else knows that you're an outsider and is conspiring around you, like, that's a very unsettling feeling. And I think, like, you could feel that in this movie. Or at least I could in your version of it. And also burning to death feels so scary.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a 7. I feel like most of it, I'm not like scared, but it's very well laid out. And it's, you could see how someone who's like, is like, he's resolute, he's going to find out what happened, would be, find this both terrifying and also intriguing. Like, he clearly wants to find out what happened so bad.
Right.
And then the last scene where they're all singing and he's like begging and screaming and praying is genuinely scary.
Yeah.
It's genuinely awful.
Yeah.
So, guys, thank you so much for letting us ruin The Wicker Man for you.
Another,
thank you for listening.
Another great movie that you guys can either watch or not watch, because we've provided an avenue where you could do either.
And as always, if you could rate and review us, we would really appreciate it. Again, we don't know how the internet works or anything, but allegedly that will help us appear for other people looking for something like this.
Yeah.
Which, of course, I'm assuming they're just searching for best podcasts ever.
Yeah, so. And then they come, they're just like, oh, it's this one, these two. So please rate and review. And please follow us on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Ruined Podcast. And we kind of tee you up to what movies we're going to be doing the next week so you can watch them in advance. And you can tweet at us questions and corrections probably and all the other fun things that Twitter is typically used for and Instagram as well.
And until then, guys, keep it spooky.
Keep it spooky. Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.